online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Sundog, the podcast. You're listening to episode number 13. Here on the show, we talk about the news, trends, best practices of internet marketing, web 2.0 development, as well as traditional media and technology. And hopefully, the information we give you today will help improve your company's bottom line. I'm Lon Keller, senior editor here at Sundog Studios. And with us on the panel today, let's start with Mr. Mark Scherseth. How are you doing today, Mark?
Doing great.
We also have our IT manager here, Mr. Anthony Suda.
Howdy.
And an application engineer, Jason Gibb, is with us as well.
That's me.
On the show today, we're going to talk about broadband internet access. Who has it? Who does it? Anyone who's using the internet today basically wants two things: faster service, lower prices. Makes sense. So on today's show, we're going to talk about how that availability is progressing. We're going to start off today's episode with an interview from Vint Cerf. This was recorded recently off Beat.tv. Vint is the chief internet evangelist for Google, and here he's going to talk about why broadband access is so important.
The reason that broadband is so important is that it enables a wide range of applications. The internet was designed with no particular application in mind, in fact, and that was important. It simply carries packets from one place to another. And that simple service, on top of that simple service, virtually anything can be built. The internet has scaled up substantially, although scaling is now its biggest threat. We're worried, frankly, in the United States especially, that we are inhibiting our own innovation and creativity. We're not creating jobs that we could create if there was broadband access everywhere in the country.
Is he right?
Yes.
Why?
Well, I'm just thinking from experience. I know that around even North Dakota here, we actually have a pretty nice broadband internet ring around the state. And there's a company in town here that works with McDonald's to actually make the drive-through experience. They actually farm it out to different houses around the state. It's no longer a person in the store that's taking your order. It's some guy on a farmhouse in rural North Dakota that gets a phone call, and it pops up on a screen, and he takes your order, and he sends that order right to the local McDonald's. And actually, the ones in this state are actually, I believe they're doing it for McDonald's, like in the cities or somewhere else in the country. It's not locally here, but... Mm-hmm.
But, so the outsource is to a North Dakota company to Minnesota or something stateside?
It's a North Dakota company here. Huh. But yeah, it's because we have that broadband. We just actually got it together out in the boonies, literally, like, you know, little towns from here that people actually have fiber to their house. Mm-hmm. And they're able to work for McDonald's.
Yeah, it opens up brand new opportunities that didn't exist just a few years ago for some of these small towns.
Yeah.
So the penetration of broadband right now doesn't seem to be the issue. It's more, I mean, is it just the cost of the services is what's holding back, especially on the lower income Americans?
I would argue that the cost hasn't actually increased that significantly in the past few years. I mean, we've got so many more options bandwidth.
Yeah.
Yeah, in many ways it has.
But only by a couple bucks. Yeah.
Just as you compare it, you know, dollar per gigabyte.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's
exactly
the part that's gone down.
Yeah. Right. But you look at, you know, some of the statistics, the availability or the penetration of broadband for lower income people, you know, the economy's hitting people hard. So that's making even inexpensive broadband hard to get for some folks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and some people are being really frugal with it, and saying, okay, well, you know, broadband is say whatever $40 a month, but I can get away with dial up for 10. You know, if I really have to, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to save that money because I need it right now. Of course,
apparently the cost of dial-up, for instance, has gone up something like 9% this year. So, you know, how long is dial-up actually going to be cheaper than some of your broadband, which is actually decreasing?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think a dial-up can't die too soon as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah. I would never go back myself, personally, no. But yeah. I'm a geek, so. Yeah.
But there was a article on the net recently that talked about the iPhone being a major driver of expanding broadband across the country. And just reading through that, I kind of liken it to when the automobile production became faster, cheaper, more people could afford that. What followed the automobile? The interstate highway system. Is this kind of the same thing, only with information technology?
I think iPhone's definitely going to play a part in that, but I think if you look at the coverage area for iPhone 3G networks today, it's pretty skimpy.
Abysmal.
Yeah, there's a better word.
Yeah,
it's basically just major metropolitan areas, and if you go out to like AT&T's site, they have a pretty good map that sort of illustrates that, and it's mm-hmm. Compare that to the level of effort they've put into marketing the iPhone, and you'll quickly be asking the question of, well, you know, only a handful of people can actually have these iPhones and use them the way they're supposed to be used. So mm-hmm. I think for iPhone to be successful, yes, we're definitely going to have to see a major build out of the you know, faster networks and of broadband. So,
and of course, that's not you know, that's the mobile companies. That's the AT&T's, the T-Mobile's, you know, the Verizon's, and you know, it kind of comes back to, you know, in the United States, as was mentioned, the availability of regulation to kind of push some of that isn't, you know, we don't have that in this country. So it's kind of a free market question.
Mm-hmm.
Are these companies motivated to build out services in more rural areas?
That's a good point. There was a study back in 2007 that looked at the different countries across the globe and the availability of broadband for its citizens. Japan far and away leads the entire pack. You know, it's basically 6-1 over the U.S. You know, not more than 4 years ago, the U.S. ranked fourth. We're down to 17th, and as far as I can see, we're still dropping. Is it just purely the lack of competition and the lack of the government's involvement in trying to promote competition?
And you're speaking specifically that ranking is related to broadband in the home. Is that what?
Broadband in the home. There are other studies that take into account businesses and things like that, but this is primarily broadband in the home.
Right. And we definitely have dropped in the last year. But I think one interesting fact I ran across was that the definition of broadband is interesting in this country. Definition by the FCC is 200. Broadband is 200 kilobits per second.
That's pretty
that's
sad.
It's barely over the old ISDN stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's considered broadband by our FCC. So that's something I think that definitely needs to change. So when we talk about, you know, our broadband coverage, we're probably less than we think. We probably have less broadband than we're even reporting, if we were to redefine that. So.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be a limiting factor for the types of applications and the types of services that are going to be available. You know, I look back on, 10 years ago, we looked at, downloading music, that, you know, that's going to take a long time. And now, you know, people download music to their phones in seconds, and it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, and movies are kind of moving in that direction as well. But I think the demand for those kind of services is really going to be what's driving not just the availability of the iPhone, but what you can do with the iPhone or other devices
like
that.
Well, that and where you're actually getting your broadband access. Are you getting it wirelessly or the more traditional method? So mm-hmm. I think, you know, I definitely think the iPhone's going to proliferate the use of, you know, 3G networks and actually wireless services, you know, over wired. So I think we have some build out yet to do, though.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
When it comes to trends in how people are using the internet today, more and more are using it as a means to watch video. Is this something that you guys have noticed as well?
Yeah, I notice it myself when I, you know, I just moved to a new place, and I said to myself, okay, I'm gonna get rid of cable, and I'm just gonna I want to do this old fashioned thing called reading a book. I don't know if I can do it.
Online?
Yeah. I don't know about the whole analog thing.
Okay.
Yeah, flipping pages of paper. I don't know. But I have Netflix, and I have access to the Netflix streaming stuff online that I've been using that, you know, for months now. And it's a great thing. And there's so many of these boxes that are coming out that even like today, I think it was either LG or some other DVD manufacturer came out with this new Blu-ray player that, besides doing Blu-ray, will do streaming Netflix movies over it. So it's the technology and all that is they're making more devices to you know, download this, sling boxes and all that, so you can watch video over the internet. Mm-hmm. I think it's there, and I think it's trying to drive the infrastructure to be developed and to be spread out a little bit more. But
considering the business that we're in, you know, let's say we have a client that wants to do a little how-to video and put it onto their website. How much, you know, let's say our growth on broadband becomes stagnant over the next 5 years. How big of an impact is that going to have? I mean, not only on us, but on our clients.
I think the impact is going to be reduced quality of the video, shorter video. You know, sure, I think the infrastructure is already there to support, you know, online video for the vast majority of web users. But, you know, when you get into, you know, how long is your video and how large is it on your screen and what's the quality of it? I think we really have to make compromises if we don't have the broadband to support those kind of things. What do you guys think?
I think the behaviors of just general use on the internet has changed to a point where we're, you know, everybody's machine here at work, for instance, is probably downloading twice as much random information on a daily basis than we did even a year ago, probably. So I think, you know, I think the demand for broadband is just assumed. You have to have, you know, a certain level of broadband just to function in pretty much any company now. So I think we're going to see that impact our business too. And mm-hmm. like you said, the quality, we're going to have reduced quality just so we can have the video. Because the bandwidth isn't going to increase, let's say. So, I mean, I agree with those things. We just have a lot more systems that we're competing with on the desktop. So,
I'd argue a little bit because it seems like more and more video is moving away from a streaming platform to more of a downloadable delivery method or a progressive download. If the end user is willing to wait just, you know, a few seconds to build up that playback stream, you know, they're going to have a much better experience with a downloadable type media as opposed to, you know, live web streaming. It seems to be a lot more efficient of a way to do things.
And your argument then is that you're not going to have decreased quality.
Yeah.
But you're going to have, say, longer.
Yeah,
wait
and
time,
from my standpoint too. I mean, that's the last thing I would want to do is to say, well, you know, the internet speeds really aren't where they should be. Maybe we should back down the quality of this video for you, or find a way to maybe overall shorten the content. You know, instead of 3 minutes, make it two. Be more efficient in your storytelling, and that way you keep that quality high. Because, in my opinion, anyway, if you present a very high quality piece of video, it's only going to reflect even better for the client.
I would agree. I would agree.
I think, you know, aside from video though, you still have this competition for the, you know, for bandwidth on your network. Also considering that a lot of software systems are going to the software as a service model, more services, systems that you use are not even on premise, and it's requiring a lot more network chatter.
Well, that's part of what the iPhone brings to the table too, is really expanding that software as a service space. Yep. Okay. I want to move to this topic now a little bit. Talk about ISP throttling. Have you guys ever felt that at home? You know, you're paying for, let's say, your 3 megabit connection, and you know darn well you're not getting it.
I did actually. I had a wireless service at home before I switched back to DSL, and mm-hmm. and they were throttling me back to, I'd say 1200 baud modem speeds mm-hmm. at one point.
Wow!
And it took a phone call took a phone call to find out why they were throttling me, and it, sure enough, it was in my contract.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's usually in the contract that they can load balance or whatever they want to call it, to make sure that their network doesn't get smoked in some areas. Because if you got an area where an area town and a certain block has got all whole bunch of college kids that can actually afford internet, you know, it's going to be saturated. Whereas you got another part of town where you got a whole bunch of, you know, grandmas and grandpas that don't have any kind of computer.
Has it been going on all this time? And just with the release, you know, with the expansion of video and other large files being delivered, you know, all the peer-to-peer networks and everything else that goes on, are we just seeing it now because of that? Has it always been happening and no one really took notice?
Well, it's been, I remember when I first got cable modem, like, oh gosh, how long has it been? 10 or 12 years ago, you know, back in my parents' house. And it, one of the things they warned about was like, okay, well, if you're in a neighborhood and it's, you know, it's a lot of people are using it, we're going to throttle you back. And I never experienced it back then because I was in a neighborhood full of grandma and grandpas. But yeah, I would definitely blame all the cool stuff that's been put up on the internet, all the videos and stuff, that we're finally getting that point where it's getting saturated. More and more people are getting on it.
It is nice to see. I mean, the FCC has stepped in a couple of cases. Comcast comes to mind, where, you know, they got caught. Comcast got caught throttling back, and the FCC said, no, you can't do that. You promised your customers something, you have to deliver.
Yeah, it either comes down to a government regulation like that or competition. You know, if you have options of cable or DSL or wireless, high-speed wireless, you know, if the options are available, then hey, you can find the best balance of cost and speed. But you know, some people may not have those options.
I think it comes back to what may be really needed in the end here is for the government to actually step in, not probably 100%. I don't want, you know, you don't want this to become a state-run service, obviously, but if it's going to help promote the expansion and the adoption of broadband, I'd be all for it. I want to read a statement that our President Bush made back in 2004, and we'll get your reactions on it and see if what he said has held true today here in 2008. Back in 2004, he was quoted as saying, "This country needs a national goal for the spread of broadband technology. We ought to have universal, affordable access for broadband technology by the year 2007, and we ought to make sure as soon as possible thereafter consumers have plenty of choices when it comes to their broadband carrier." How much of that has come true?
I think we've already seen a major increase in the actual total coverage, but I think you've seen you haven't seen a lot of growth in the low income bracket, $20,000 a year or below.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have to buy $4 gas versus
right, so you're going to choose dial up, you know, or nothing,
coffee shop,
right? So I think President Bush may have said that, but I think you also have some of your other, you know, the other side is saying that right now. As a matter of fact, with the current presidential race here, is basically saying the same thing. We need to get better coverage for every American. And, you know, right now, I don't know if it's the politics that's going to do it, or if it's, like Jason said earlier, if it's the free market that's really going to push this into every single home.
Well, like you said, Mark, this is a presidential election year, and Vint Cerf has some more comments on that topic, what he thinks needs to happen from the government in this election year to help promote broadband.
The principal one is getting policies together that will cause more broadband to be rolled out everywhere in the country, and that means providing incentives for people to invest in the infrastructure. It may actually mean a re-regulation of some aspect of the internet in order to assure that there is either competition or fair access to underlying broadband resources. In some countries, for example, the broadband provider is required to provide a wholesale access to broadband services so as to allow multiple parties to compete with higher level applications. The U.S. is far behind in terms of its regulatory posture. It's still very hands-off. So that's a big issue, is the broadband capability. The other one is getting IP version 6 into the internet so we don't run out of address space. And after that, it's all a question of people inventing new applications.
Two things I want you guys to touch on in this. Explain to me, what does he mean when he's talking about wholesale availability?
Well, he's talking like having a big company like, Quest or whatnot, whoever, have, all the capability, have all the infrastructure in the ground, have the fiber there so that they can sell it to other resellers or whatnot, which is what is happening right now, actually, but have the availability there.
Then part two of what I wanted to ask about is IP version 6. What's that all about?
Well, it's basically a larger address space, okay? So IP version...
More digits?
Yep, basically.
Okay. All right.
Okay, let's think of it that way.
Okay, that's fine.
And I think it was originally rolled out in more of the academic and science research space.
Is it up and running now in that space?
I believe it is. Yes. Yeah, I believe it is. And it's just not something that you're seeing yet on, in more of that commercial space. So I think it used to be the Internet 2 is what was the big sponsor of that.
Okay.
V6.
Okay.
Does that ring a bell? Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard concerns that the IPv4, which is...
That's what we're on.
That's what we're on, yeah, right now. If that there is concern that there will be a lack of IP addresses available, and they keep pushing that out. Mm-hmm.
They first said it was this year, and then now, 2010 and 2012.
Yeah, and I think that it's, they're probably pushing it up because there's a lot of smart people trying to figure out how to stretch things out, because a lot of organizations
add more routers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One IP for a whole organization. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think actually, though, from an IP perspective, it's kind of hard to get a big C block of, of addresses today, right?
Well, all the companies have them reserved and all that. All of them are reserved. It's just who they're giving them out to. You can have some ISPs that are sitting on, thousands of blocks, and others that don't have any to sell any of their customers.
But it's more than just going to your ISP and saying, "Hey, I need a C block. You want to sign me up for one of them?" I mean, it's not that easy.
It should be.
And so with V6, you're thinking that you pretty much bust any limits that they have on currently. Yeah. So,
yeah.
How hard would it be to roll that out broadly? I mean,
I think most of the hardware is
ready to go right now.
The hardware for the internet should be ready to go from what I've understood. Like the major backbones for the internet, that's all in place. That's fine.
Okay.
It's just, have all the local ISPs. Are they up and ready to go with it? Most of them should be. I mean, it's not.
So it's going to be ultimately their call. There's going to have to be like a switchover date, or is this something we can roll into gradually?
IP version 6, I believe, is backwards compatible to IP4. So, I mean, it's just going to be, this is available. I mean, I could switch us all here at Sundog to IP6 if I really wanted to.
Okay.
I'm not going to, but... but yeah, everything is ready to go, and it's not like it's, okay, everybody's going to lose the internet today and while we do the switchover, so...
It's not quite like the switchover to digital TV, for example. Where,
right. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Okay, very good. Anthony, Mark, Jason, thank you very much for joining us today. And if anyone in the audience has a question for us, you can send an email to thepodcast@sundog.net. Audio comments are always welcome. Or you could give us a phone call at 1-888-9-SUNDOG. That's 888-978-6364. We also have a Sundog tag set up in Delicious for you to share some items with us. That keyword is Sundog the Podcast, all one word. Now, since this is Lucky Show number 13, we're going to end the day with some music. This is from the PodSafe Music Network. This is Last of the Superheroes from American Heartbreak. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time on Sundog the Podcast. We've seen them on TV our whole life. Super friends were the Rolling Stones, were larger than life. I can be like anyone I see.